Well, let's welcome you back to this week of the Association. I'm Rob Pinier, joined once again by my good buddy Kevin Lucco. And this week, Kevin and I are honored to welcome back, I think for the first time this season, manager Steve Montgomery, Sioux City manager Steve Montgomery. Steve, thanks for joining us this week.
Hey, thanks for having me, guys.
Hey, Steve, let's just start with the biggest news here, 500 victories yesterday. How's that feel for you?
I mean, obviously, it's a pretty good milestone. I don't think a lot of people thought it could be done where we've been able to do it. It is the smallest market and such. But, you know, the credit has to go not on me but onto the players. I mean, the players ultimately win and lose your ball games, and really they win them for you. And as managers, we screw it up and lose. And all the credit to the players. To think about it's, the ninth season on the field, 10th overall. We didn't play in the COVID year. And to get to that milestone is some pretty darn good players have come through, and all the credit needs to go to them.
Now, I got to say is that, Kevin and I have said what a great job you've been doing for years, and here you are, 500 victories. So, do we get a little bit of a less of a jinx on us for touting how great you've been doing?
Yeah, I mean, a little bit of it, yeah. I just don't want you guys to pick me in the playoffs. Every time you pick me, I lose. So, I appreciate the support you guys have given. And, it's been a long time just to think that our first time sitting down together was at CHS Field back in 2015. And here we are 8 years later, and the league has grown to even bigger and better things. It doesn't go unnoticed with the people that run teams and such, the coverage you guys give us, and we truly appreciate that.
Yeah, I like you a lot better now than I did back then. You kind of mess with my favorite team that season, so but it's gotten better.
Yeah, the crazy thing is that obviously from that what happened in that season and stuff, there were some things that were said that weren't said out of my mouth but were said out of other people's mouth that got back to people. And I never once questioned anything. If you can't trust the people that are running your league, then you shouldn't be in that league. And when it was said, I just told my late newspaper guy, hey, if you want to find out, you call, but I trust those guys. And I guess he called. So, that caused a little bit of beef between me and George. But, over the years, we've kind of let bygones be bygones. I have a lot of respect for what George was able to do there in St. Paul and now what he's able to continue to do there with King County.
Yeah, of all years for you guys to also have a 70-plus win season, it's got to be the one year where you guys kind of interrupted St. Paul's path to the title. So it was, for a Saints fan, it was frustrating, but in the long run, I have a ton of respect for what both teams accomplished that season.
Yeah, and here's the crazy thing, is that if you take our losses off of St. Paul and take the wins and the loss, I mean, St. Paul handled us pretty much all year. I think we had a losing record, maybe 5-8 or something like that. It wasn't devastating, but, even taking, even though they had a winning record against us, taking our losses off against them, I mean, it's mind-boggling what you were able to accomplish. I mean, basically winning 3 out of every 4 games. I mean, and arguably, I'll say it, one of the best throws maybe in the history of the American Association from Michael Lang in Game 4 to nail, I believe it was the guy from the University of Minnesota, the third baseman.
Slow-mo Nate Hansen.
Nate Hansen, that's right. Nate Hansen, he literally threw it right at the edge of the plate, and he slid right into the glove. And I, the funny thing is, and I tell George this, we just talked about this the last time we saw each other, which was in May. We talked about it, and I was telling him the whole time, I was yelling 3-3-3 out of the dugout because I thought there was no chance we're getting Nate at home. And sure enough, we nailed him. And had, you know, the funny thing is, that was the second out of the inning. Okay? Had Nate been a half a step faster, the winning run would have been at third base. And if you recall, the next ball was hit as a sac fly. And that would have given St. Paul a 3-2 lead at the time. And, you know, who knows what happens in Game 5 because Kramer Snead had dominated us all year.
Well, we forgave Michael Lang for that 4 years later when he helped them win a title. So,
correct.
But at
correct.
The time, yeah, yep. That was devastating at the time.
Yeah, yep. You know, obviously I caught a lot of grief for that one. But, you know, we needed a left-handed hitter at that time because of the teams we were facing and such. St. Paul was looking for that. And I honestly feel as though had we not made that trade with St. Paul and we got Hazel Baker and St. Paul got Lang, I don't honestly feel either one of us get to the final. I honestly don't know that answer. And it just worked out for both teams. And, you know, unfortunately for us, we caught St. Paul when they were just absolutely in fuego, coming back from a 2-0 deficit, and we could never get the momentum back.
And I have to admit, I did flash back to 2015 when I saw you and George talking at the tryouts that they had during the All-Star game. I thought, oh, well, that's good to see those guys talking. So
yeah, I have a lot of respect for them.
Like you said, the years have gone by. You know, a lot of water under the bridge.
Mm-hmm. I have a lot of respect for him and what he's been able to accomplish. And I mean, he has over 1,000 wins. So, you know, he's one of the forefathers. I mean, you know, you have a lot that, you know, like two that went in this year, Ed Noddle. You got Ed Noddle, Doug Simonek. You have George Samus is right there in that conversation. You have Rick Forney. I mean, Hal Lanier's got to be in there. There's a lot of great managers that have rolled through here. And George just continues to put good product on the field. George continues to get the right guys in place and get in the playoffs each and every year and give his organization an opportunity to win a championship.
Do you see that with those guys over 1,000 wins? And then you think to yourself, okay, I have busted my rear and I'm at 500. Wow.
Yeah, I'll tell you. I mean, like I said, this is my ninth season. And to think that these guys, 1,000, 1,300, and everything, wow, man, it's impressive. It is absolutely impressive. To think about, I have to do this for another 9 years. And that's, you know, that's with keeping a above 500 winning percentage and all of that. Like, you have to produce year in and year out. And it's absolutely remarkable what some of these men have been able to do.
Now, Steve, let me ask you, in the first few years that you're managing this team, you and I have talked quite a bit about that 2014 season. You're really trying to learn how to manage in Sioux City. But then you have just a 75-win season in 2015, a 71-winning season in 2018. The last years, you haven't been close to those kind of numbers, but I thought the job that you've done in building those teams, it hasn't been the star-laden lineup, but it's been rosters that you've just continuously built on and found a way to win games. Is there a greater satisfaction sometimes to you looking back and going, I don't have four magnificent starters here that are dominating the league, but I'm finding a way to win anyway?
Absolutely. There's no doubt that's my least best managerial job was in 15 and 18. I'm not going to sit here and say it wasn't. Those were two teams that were just write the lineup card and get out of the way and let them do what they need to do. And But, you know, I thought last year, all the roster building that we had to do in season, finding guys when people were limited and having to think outside the box and stuff. And even this year's been extremely challenging on, you know, finding players and finding replacements and really juggling the disabled list and juggling your salary cap and, you know, knowing where your numbers are. And then on top of that, when you're worrying about that from 9 till 5 o'clock in the afternoon, now you got to worry about how are you going to win that night game, getting the scouting reports out to the people, having your meetings. It's been grueling on that side of it. And then, obviously, in the games, you kind of let the players be, let them be themselves. But, you know, you're having to put bunts on. You're having to do the little things to make sure you're getting runs, because in that stretch of games where we were faltering with the offense, we were having to try to generate offense, whether it was through hit and runs, sacrifice bunts, you know, really, hey, we're going to take till, you know, on a 2-0 pitch, giving them a take. And, you know, it was crazy. But at the end of the day, all the hard work that the players put in, correcting what they needed to correct, they were able to do that. And now we're seeing a little bit of the fruits of our labor. But it's a challenging job with what, and I think every manager has said this to you guys, is it's challenging because there's just not a lot of players out there.
Try to describe it if you could, because in my blog on Sunday, I kind of described what the grind is like for not just players, managers, but staff and everybody involved with the baseball organization. Describe, if you could, your usual day. What are you doing from the time you get up until the time you get to the ballpark to the time batting practice and game time starts? It's not as simple as you don't just go up and throw BP and throw a lineup together.
No. Really, it starts the night after. Or say, for instance, I'd walk you through. We just get done with the game just now. So immediately I would come in, win or lose, I would check scores around the leagues, right? I would check box scores. I would see who's doing what, see what moves they've been made. You know, stuff like that. Did someone change something in their lineup? Did anybody get hurt tonight? I'd check through all those box scores, and then you write that stuff down. Like I have a notebook. I just write everything down that I'm seeing. At that point, I go over my box score. I give myself about 30 to 45 minutes of kind of what could we have done different, what went wrong, what went right, stuff like that. Talk to my assistant coaches and stuff. They normally leave at that time after I talk to them. I'm there for about another hour, and I'm preparing for the next day's game, you know, making sure that we have the scouting report ready. I'll text my assistant coach, I need this on this guy, and I need that on this guy, and stuff like that. And once we start building, obviously, our scouting, I'll call it Rolodex, on our computers and stuff, that all goes by the wayside, unless there's a new move made, right? Then we got to research that guy. But once you get the Rolodex, obviously the time commitment after the game kind of changes. But and then I normally, I get out of the clubhouse normally 12:30, 1 o'clock in the morning. I leave, hop in my car. It's about a 4-mile drive, 4.5-mile drive to the place I stay. I pull in. I normally will pop on something like Drugs Inc. or How to Catch a Smuggler or something. I want to get my mind completely off baseball for a half hour before I go to bed. I wake up the next morning about 8:30, 9 o'clock, and it's time to start consuming caffeine. And I go and I get a couple cups of coffee, whether it's at a local coffee shop. Sometimes I just go straight to the field, whatever. But I'm normally no later than 9:30. I'm at the field. I walk into the front office. I have a conversation with my GM, talk about any promotions we have that night, anything like that, that we have going on. If not, then I just, you know, talk shop with him a little bit. I'll go in my office about 10 o'clock in the morning, and then I'm checking minor league transactions. I check, you know, who's been released, everything of that nature. I go through it. I write it down in a separate notebook, and I do all that. About that normally takes me about a half hour, 45 minutes. So now you're talking 10:45 in the morning. By that time, I need another cup of coffee. I go and have another cup of coffee. My staff starts coming in about 11:30, 12 o'clock. And then if we're at home, at 1 o'clock, I have what we call early work. So I call it double early work. That's if you need one-on-one attention from any coach or myself. If you need one-on-one attention, I have them schedule it the night before. If not, 2 o'clock early work starts, flips on the field, or machine work on the field. Set up the machine, or we're doing flips. We have the Rapsodo out there to give them data, to give them feedback. At 3 o'clock, pitchers take the field. They take the field, they go throw. About 3:15, trainer comes in, gives me all the injury updates and stuff like that. I'm starting to work on my lineup that day. We talk after the early hitting, then goes cage work. Normally in cage work, I let the players go. My hitting coach will come in for like 10 or 15 minutes. We talk a little bit about that night's starting pitcher, you know, what his left-right splits are, what his out pitch is, stuff like that. Put together, then Bobby's normally, by that time Bobby's back in there, and then I post the lineup. I talk to Bobby about it, and then we post the lineup and go take BP at 4 o'clock. At 5 o'clock, we'll come in. Normally, if it's the first game of a series, I have a radio interview. So that goes for about 10 minutes. If not, if it's not the first day, I literally get an hour to myself. I'll sit there and talk with Bobby and Josh, but I get an hour. I normally make a sandwich or something, and we will turn on something on TV. And at this point, normally my daughter's FaceTiming me 112 times in that hour because she knows that's kind of her time a little bit. So we're catching up on all what she does and everything like that. I'll make a few phone calls to managers in the league and stuff like that. And then at 6 o'clock, it's, you know, it's time to start getting ready. I do my lineup card that I exchange with the managers. I get my stat packs hung up on the wall. I get my lineup card hung up on the wall. I write down their lineup on the other side of the lineup card. And you get ready to play that night's game, and then 7 o'clock hits. It's game time, and then it's like Groundhog's Day, to be honest. The next day, you do the same thing. And a lot of people think that this is like a pretty cushy, easy job, but it's far from that. It is an absolute grind for managers and for players, because the players, most of them aren't used to playing 100 games a season. You know, most of them have been part-time players or role players in organizations. And all of a sudden, they're coming here, and they're dudes, and they need to play 100 games. So it becomes very taxing.
So for the amount of time you put in a day, you're probably making $5 an hour.
And I wouldn't change it for the world because I love what I do. I just absolutely, love it. And, you know, and I think every manager, I think we have arguably the best group of independent managers in independent baseball, and that'll rival the Atlantic League, that rivals the Frontier League. I feel like our group of managers are really talented, and if you talk to all of them spend countless hours trying to find turnover rocks. I mean, we're looking for players everywhere, and you know, sometimes it works out, sometimes it doesn't, but you know, as long as you can look yourself in the mirror and say, I've done everything I can, and that's the goal at the end of the year is, and I tell myself that, if I can look at myself in the mirror and say, I've done everything I can to help my organization win, to help hopefully bring a championship here, it just didn't work out, you know, I can go into the off season a happy man, but, you know, I get hungrier every year, and it just seems like it consumes me.
Well, let's talk about those relationships with other managers here for a moment, because you made a huge set of moves this past weekend bringing in John Sheeks from Gary South Shore, adding Daniel Lingua from there as well. Sheeks has a huge start for you on Sunday. Lingua is a guy you know is going to hit for you. Talk just a little bit about those moves and how they came about for you and how you see them helping the club.
I had heard through the rumor mill that that there was a little bit of trouble brewing there in Gary. And I had asked, to be perfectly honest with you guys, I had asked about John Sheeks probably 3 to 4 weeks ago after after we had a little bit of a rash of injuries, right? And I had asked about John Sheeks. And not Daniel, but just John Sheeks. So I had asked about him. And then, like, I heard some, there was some trouble brewing. And, you know, I didn't hear what it was, but I heard some people were wanting out and stuff like that. So I had texted Lamar back and asked him, you know, is Sheeks available? And he said yes, that he was available. And, you know, I was like, you know, there's not a lot out there that is available from other teams, but I happened to be carrying at the time 25 guys. And, you know, I made him an offer. And then I saw Lingua went out on a transaction. And I was like, oh, is Lingua available too? And he said, yes. So then, you know, I said, do you like people? Who do you like on my team? And stuff like that. And he's like, well, who would be willing to come? And everything like that. And, you know, he had a little relationship with Sierra when he was with Houston. So I was able to give him a AAA and a AA player, but at the same time, we were able to acquire arguably two of their better players. And I just thought they were fits for us because it makes us faster up the middle. And I thought that was something that we were lacking, was speed at both shortstop and second base. I felt as though we were, and obviously I wanted a little more depth in my starting rotation. The reason why is when I traded on Saturday, I had, you know, my magic number, what was it, 5, right? But I have this double header staring me right in the face in Chicago next Friday. And I thought, man, I cannot bring back someone on short rest if I'm going to try to pitch someone in the playoffs and stuff like that. And then on top of that, being able to put possibly a starter into my bullpen, where if things don't go right for a starter, I'm not blowing through my bullpen. I could bring someone out, let's say in game one, if my starter is faltering, that can give me depth, and I can keep some of my back-end arms fresh for games 2 and 3. So that was very important. And I've always said, looking back on some of my better teams, that was always a piece we were missing. And I remember telling it to Bobby, and I said, if I can acquire Sheeks, you know, I think that if it's him in the rotation or whatnot, I thought it was just a chance that we could take. And it came to fruition, and I couldn't be happier. I mean, the game he threw the other night, I mean, it was impressive because he had 98 pitches through 8 innings and realistically gave up maybe 4 hard hit balls. So I thought it was very impressive what he was able to accomplish.
Now today, both the league and us here named Wilfredo Jimenez as the player of the week, a guy that you brought in kind of late to be your catcher and wasn't putting up, having a pretty solid season offensively, but this week really put up some big time power numbers for you. What do you think has been his, I mean, how instrumental has he been in handling your pitching staff, which I know is a key part of what you want a catcher for, and the job he's also doing offensively for you this year?
It's been incredible. And you know, as you guys all know, my park isn't the most friendly to power hitters, right? We know that. But he has made, at times, my ballpark look small. And it's crazy to think that you know, he's able to do what he does. And if he could move whatsoever, like, and I tease him all the time, he could be the slowest guy I've ever seen. If he could move whatsoever, he could maybe have 30 doubles already. I mean, like the other day, he hit one off center field wall. He ends up with a single because, you know, the ball ricocheted right back to him. He's not going to risk it, right? He's going to play it smart. So, and I credit him for that because, you know, he's been, as a catcher, catching as many games as he's caught, he's battling some nagging injuries and little pulls and strains and stuff like that. So, but he's been very good behind there, calling a great game. And he, what he's better at than most is he can, you know, even though he's from Venezuela, he speaks very good English. He is a big time communicator with the pitching staff. He comes into the dugout and he's telling them, hey, we got to get better here, or we got to execute this pitch, or we got to do that. He's very much a communicator and a leader, and he's a guy you can have fun with, and he makes the game fun. He has been able to bring his son and wife over for the last month or two, and it's been a treat having them around and being able to rely on him, you know, every day to be back there calling the pitches.
Now, one of the things I've always liked about you is I know you're focused on your season. I know, you know, biggest time of the year is you guys are battling to try to get a playoff spot. But I also know that your eye would not turn that far away from the NFL or college football. So you got to talk a little college football with me. Okay. Who are you seeing going all the way this year?
Obviously, I think, you know, Georgia has a very stud-filled lineup. I think, you know, the biggest thing is they're going to have to replace Stetson Bennett. I think he was 35 years old last year when he led him to the national championship. So he was like his 12th year in college. I think he's a doctor by now. But, you know, that's going to be a big role they got to fill. But their roster's stacked. It's loaded. You know, they play in the correct side of the SEC. You know, the West is a little more loaded than the East. So, You gotta like their chances. You also gotta like, even though I don't think they're gonna be able to win once they get in, I think USC is going to be one of the teams that's gonna be fighting. That's, you know, Bobby Post, my pitching coach, that's his favorite team. They're gonna be able to score 100 points. They might win games 100-80, but you know, Lincoln Riley has something figured out offensively. They got the Williams kid at quarterback. Ohio State, obviously you guys know I'm a huge Buckeye fan. You know, who's going to win that QB starting role? You know, but we got to get better on the lines. Michigan has pushed us around the last 2 years. Even though we lost a heartbreaker to Georgia last year, you could see the speed was there. I think we have the best wide receiving core in the nation. It's just the question mark is going to be who's throwing them the ball. So that'll be a big question mark leading into it. Alabama obviously is going to be there. Nick Saban, you can't count them out, and Harbaugh. I mean, I think, you know, out of those five teams right there, I think four of them, that in my opinion, those five are going to be the five that'll be battling for that final four spot. But, you know, upsets happen and stuff. I think the Michigan – Ohio State game, I think both teams are going to enter it undefeated. They'll probably be ranked second and third in the nation by that point. And then obviously, you know, the Georgia, if Georgia can stay clean and Alabama can stay clean, you got the SEC title. But the crazy thing is, let's say all four of those teams end up undefeated in the conference championships. You know, I believe you're going to have an undefeated USC team unless Utah can knock them off. Utah is a little more physical. Utah's built around a Big Ten team, like a Big Ten team. They can control the ball. They're physical up front. That's what's going to give USC problems. But let's say that USC's undefeated and they go into that Pac-12 championship game against the Utah. If, you know, you're going to have two losers. If USC wins, obviously they're going to slip in. So now what are you going to do? You're going to take a one-loss SEC team, you're going to take a one-loss Big Ten team, and that's why you need to just it's time to open up the national title and the national championship to 16 teams. It's just time. The transfer portal's changed everything. Top 16 teams need to be in it.
I got to say, I'm a little surprised. I figured you'd have your ACC champion team going all the way.
The all-crap conference? No. That's, no, ACC, I mean, you're going to have Clemson. They're going to be there, Florida State. And then it's just a hodgepodge of mediocre teams. But with the realigning happening, this has totally gotten out of control. It is driven by the almighty dollar. And if we're going to, and this is a serious statement I'm going to make, if we're going to put Oregon in the Big Ten, Washington in the Big Ten, UCLA and USC, and it's driven by the dollar, let them have their education, but also pay them a salary. I don't want to hear about the NIL deals and everything like that. They can do all that advertising and everything. Start paying the players a salary, because you're making them travel 23. Like, what if USC has to go to Rutgers for their first Big Ten game, fly back, and then they got to go back to Happy Valley? You're telling me those guys are student athletes? They're leaving on Thursday morning. They're going to have to leave Thursday morning to get out there to prepare. So they haven't become student athletes. They've become salesmen for the university. And start paying the guys. You're going to have to, because of all the travel.
Guys,
question for Kevin. Okay. Go ahead, Kevin.
I had my nurse on Saturday afternoon. He's from Florida, big Florida State fan. And, you know, we were talking about realignment. And I brought up the point. In the state of Florida, of all the teams, Division I in Florida, how many conferences are represented? It's just insane to have all these teams in Florida and hardly any of them are in the same conference.
I don't honestly think any of them are in the same conference. You got UCF that's in you got Jacksonville that's in the Atlantic Sun, I believe. You have Florida in the SEC, Florida State in the ACC, Miami might be in the ACC, or are they in the Big East?
They're in the ACC.
I can't remember where Miami.
USF and UCF are in the same conference. I think that's the only one.
No, not anymore, because UCF just jumped to the Big 12.
No, okay.
So UCF's in the Big 12, and now USF is in Conference USA, I believe. And you have at Florida, Jacksonville, FIU, FAU. I think FAU and FIU and Jacksonville are in the same conference, I believe. That might be even mistaken. But USF and UCF used to be in the same conference, but this year they will split, UCF joining the Big 12. It's the same thing with Texas. Like, Texas is in, what are they in now? They're going to the SEC, aren't they? So they won the Big 12.
So.
Texas A&M was in the SEC at the time. You had Texas Tech. And then you got, you know, UT Arlington and everything. It's all driven by money and TV rights and TV deals. We all know it. None of the presidents want to admit it. But it's driven by the almighty dollar. So if that's the case, then let's just call a spade a spade. And you don't need to be governed by anybody. Okay. The NCAA, just get rid of it and take the top 120 schools, throw them in the pot, and sell your football rights. And if you sell your football rights, you're talking about a $2 to $5 billion deal over 10 years to have 16 teams play for a national championship. So you could facilitate all of those financial needs of these universities with one sport.
Now we got to have one big prediction for you, because you know Kevin and I are most concerned about the NHL after American Association Baseball. So after what you watched last season, moves going on, give us a little Stanley Cup Finals for us this year.
Oh, Stanley Cup Finals! I'm gonna go with Edmonton out of the West. I think if Connor McDavid can stay healthy, they're gonna have an opportunity to be really, really good. And out of the East, I'm gonna go back, and I'm gonna say they're gonna be hungry. I'm gonna go with Boston. I think you know, they set the wins record, they did all that, the points record and everything, and then they get bounced in the first round. I think you're gonna see a team. I don't think they'll race out like they did last year. I think you'll see an organization rethink minutes on the ice and stuff like that and really prepare for a playoff run. I think you'll see a Boston-Edmonton final. And, you know, I cannot pick any Boston teams because I don't like the Patriots, the Celtics, none of them, just because of my dear friend Connor Ryan. We go with an Edmonton championship.
Do you kind of see them as what happened with Tampa Bay a few years ago when they got bounced in the first round after that big season and Columbus knocked them out and then they come back and win the title? Do you see that kind of same kind of thing that went on for Boston this year?
Yes, I do. And I think, you know, if I was putting money down, that's who I'd put money down on, Boston. You know, when you have the roster that Boston has, it's very similar to the roster that Tampa Bay had, and they have everybody coming back. And those players, they have some unfinished business to take care of, and I think you'll see them, you know, they got caught off guard. Let's just be honest. They were too cocky. They got caught off guard, and they got beat. And that's why I want college football so bad. Is because anybody can beat anybody in the NHL. Anybody can beat anybody in college football if one guy has an off day. Let's make them win more than two games to get a national championship. And the viewership would be off the charts for those games.
I like it. Well, Steve, we appreciate you being on. And since you're a veteran on the show, you know you get to give us the final thought for this week. So once again, the floor is yours.
You know, there's a lot of uncertainty around you know, what's going on here in next year and years after. And you know, if this is my, you know, final show or final glimpse of being the Sioux City manager, I just want to thank the league, the managers, the teams, front office people, my owner, my front office, everybody that's involved in the league. I just want to give a huge thank you to everybody, your guys' selves, everything. You know, Sioux City has been a place that, you know, I've been able to call basically home for me since 2014. And, you know, it's out of our hands right now. But, you know, if any of the people of Sioux City are listening to this, you know, I want to be back, and I want to win another 500 here. So, you know, hopefully we can come to some resolution on what's going on, and make sure that we're here for many more years to come. I know we have a front office that is dedicated to not only winning but dedicated to the community and giving back, and that's been a huge part of my job, and hopefully we can continue to do so.
Fantastic. Steve Montgomery, thanks for joining us this week.
Yeah, thanks for having me, guys. Thank you.
Well, Kevin, we always love having Steve Montgomery on the show, and that was an interesting little final thought he gave us here, Kevin. Maybe there is some concern about the Sioux City Explorers being back next year.
I really hope the city of Sioux City thinks this one through thoroughly, because the only real possible suitors would be the Northwoods League and the Mink League. And the Northwoods League, if they get that ballpark, they're not letting go of it. And Sioux City is going to lose their only real professional sports team. And they'll never get it back. I know John Roos has been a polarizing figure in the city of Sioux City. But say what you want about him. Look what he has done to keep that professional baseball alive in Sioux City when, frankly, the city has done very little to support it. So think this one through, City Council, because, boy, if you lose professional baseball for Sioux City, I know you'd lose my vote. So you got a man down there, Steve Montgomery, working his ass off. Rob, that was his response to my answer about what a manager goes through in a day. I don't know about you, but that was a real eye-opener for me.
Yeah.
It's not just wake up and read the newspaper, watch SportsCenter, go out for a walk, and then head to the ballpark. It's amazing what he and other managers in this league put together. And for what he's done for the city, you know, with all we saw it earlier this year with these baseball clinics Explorers have put on during the day, on the day when they have a night game to play. You know, the City of Montgomery and the Explorers have given a lot back to the community. So, Sioux City, let's return that loyalty and let's keep professional baseball in Sioux City. And like I said, let's keep Sioux City as a good professional sports town.
Absolutely. And you know, great history there. I mean, just beyond the Explorers from 1993, great long-standing history. Negro Leagues had a great Sioux City team there. And professional baseball has been a fantastic part of the Sioux City culture and climate. Just be sad to see that come to an end. So, I don't know. You know, Northwoods team, you never know what you wind up getting out of that. But you know you're going to have a winner every year with Steve Montgomery in the dugout. So, makes perfect sense to me, at least.
I know what you're getting with the Northwoods League team. I have followed the league. I have been to several ballparks. Sioux City, you don't want that. I'm not saying it's a shabbily ran organization. They are very good operators. They got, like, their digital content is very good. They do have their own app where you can watch all the games for free. Maybe I shouldn't be pumping their tires like this, but frankly, the quality of play is not there. And a team coming into Sioux City, it's a new slate. It's not an organization that has given to the city for 30 years. These are new operators, and they'll talk up a pretty slick game and everything. But frankly, for a good part of the Northwoods League season, you're beginning the season with second-rate college players because the best players are out still playing in regional, super regional, college World Series games. After that, you got guys that have moved on, maybe got drafted. And by the end of the college baseball season, the players, lots of them, have gone back to school. Rob, I saw a playoff game in Mankato a few years ago where Mankato had to play a pitcher in right field because they didn't have enough position players available. You going to tell me that ever happens in the American Association? Oh, hell no. I can't say enough. There's a niche for collegiate summer leagues. There are markets for them. Frankly, Sioux City, you don't want to become known as a college summer bat league market. frankly, there are markets in the league that I would love to see be American Association markets. You know, right off the top of my head, I'm thinking Madison. I'm thinking La Crosse. But even I would even throw St. Cloud in the mix because you're close enough to the Twin Cities where you could draw people from the metropolitan area. And, I mean, that's a shame because I just feel like it's just clogging up potential expansion for the association, but it's tough to try to bully your way into those cities also. But I just can't say enough, Sioux City, you don't want to become a Northwoods League town because unless, God forbid, you would drag Sioux Falls into it with you, you're going to be an outpost. You're not going to have those close regional rivalries right now like you do with Lincoln and Sioux Falls. I mean, I think your closest rivalry probably would be with Bismarck. That's a ways away, folks.
Absolutely. And, you know, the part, too, about it, Kevin, is that if you're a Sioux City fan, it's not only rivals that you have in the American Association, but a lot of these same teams that you're playing American Association baseball are the same cities that you have in USHL hockey. So it's so natural to make those rivalries even bigger. You're facing the Lincoln Stars or, you know, teams like that. So why not just stick with that and enjoy those rivalries a little bit more in baseball? Seems to make perfect sense to me.
Frankly, if the playoffs play out like I think they will, I really wish, because I'm banking on Fargo-Moorhead finishing fourth. I'm really hoping Kansas City opts to play Fargo-Moorhead because I think a Sioux City-Sioux Falls playoff series would just be delicious to take in. I just love to see how close those two cities are. And I think for playoff baseball, I think you would see Sioux Falls fans go down to Sioux City for games and vice versa.
Yeah. I think you're absolutely right about that. Well, let's stay with Sioux City here for a minute, Kevin. As ranked seventh in the rankings this week, a club that is battling to try to stay healthy. Huge moves. We talked about John Sheeks being traded for, as well as Daniel Lingua. How much of an impact do you see? Is this a deciding factor to secure this team a playoff spot and even giving them a championship run?
Yeah, at first when I looked at the trade, I'm thinking Sheeks being added, that's a lot of pitching depth where you can have in a playoff series that luxury where if your starter just doesn't have it that night, you can pull the plug pretty early. Bring in another guy that's a starter that's stretched out, they can go multiple innings, and that's an incredible asset to have. But now with the way Steve kind of described his pitching staff as being a little banged up, I think it just becomes a huge move getting Sheets just as far as having a formidable rotation going into a three-game series.
Sioux City right now entering Tuesday night's action when play resumes, currently in second place in the West Division, 48-44, seven behind Kansas City. The Monarchs are, I believe, one game away, from clinching that division title right now. So it's just a battle for 2 through 4 in this division. And interestingly enough, this week, one team ahead of Sioux City in the rankings this week, the Fargo-Moorhead Redhawks, coming in sixth place, Kevin. They are currently in fourth in the West Division, 45-48, 10.5 out, 3.5 behind Sioux City, holding a two-game advantage over Lincoln for that fourth playoff spot. Kevin McGovern had a couple of big starts for the club recently. Colton Davis has been very good. You talked about there may be enough of a rotation here to help this team have another shot at a playoff title here and maybe another Miles Wolf Cup even.
I think the X factor with that all is Tyler Grauer. Can Tyler Grauer manage to put together a couple of 2022-like starts? And if you can get that, and the way Colton Davis is rolling, and, you know, the Gov's going to be the Gov, you know, that gives Fargo-Moorhead a fighting chance in a season in which I think self-admittedly they'd say it just has not been the best year for the Red Hawks. You know, besides, you know, injuries and signings, it's been a real uphill battle for this club. But you know, if you get the proverbial chip in the chair, and you get Davis, McGovern, and Grauer throwing well, why not? You know, this team is postseason tested. But like I said in the blog, I think right now the bullpen is where you'll find the issues with this team. And outside of Aliazzi's closing games, I just don't see where that sets up well between the starting pitching and getting to Aliazzi's in the ninth.
You know, an interesting part for me in particular about Fargo has been the offense just never materialized. I mean, this was a lineup I thought was going to be murderer's row this season. And one guy that just got off to a terrible start after finding that huge traumatic moment in his career, he winds up getting the game-winning hit, Leobaldo Pena last year in championship series, gets the championship series winning hit. As a matter of fact, got off to a terrible start this season. Kevin, two homers through May, sitting in the 230s, really battling to try to get his batting average. And Philly's at 260, but I've been really kind of surprised by the home run numbers for him lately. And I'm wondering if he's the kind of guy, because he's done this in the past, Kevin, that the club can kind of rally and say, hey, we're going to get on this guy's back, and he could carry this team and get a little bit better numbers out of a Correll Prime. And now you got Dylan Thomas back. Is Leobaldo Pena the guy you look at and go, wow, he could lead this team back to a championship series?
I would have to say he could definitely be a factor. You know, he is postseason tested. And he is a guy that can get hot. And, you know, he's one of the guys that I think what saved Fargo's season was the three-game winning streak they went on in the middle of the week where they did get the finale in Gary and then took the first two games in Sioux City against a team they've had a heck of a time with this year. And they put up 27 runs in those three games. So, You know, we know the pedigree is there for a very good lineup. It's just a matter of finding consistency.
The number five team in the rankings this week, the Sioux Falls Canaries, they enter in third place in the Western Division, 48-46, 8 games out, 1 game behind Sioux City. They are 3 games away from clinching their first playoff berth since 2020. That seems like an almost foregone conclusion. And Kevin, it looks like finally Mike Meyer has really been looking for that magic formula over the last 4 or 5 years here. Looks like he's found it by building a team built more on base percentage and speed and getting enough starting pitching, especially from the young guys. I mean, I think that's been the real story for this club, is it's been the younger guys that have really been leading that staff.
Or has it been? Because when you look at the staff, you've got Akeem Bostic, who's a veteran of this league. And the guy that's really turned it around, I think it's been the most consistent pitcher as of late, has been Ty Culbreth. But within that, you know, those are your veterans, and your veterans have to be your best guy. So they're doing what they're supposed to be doing. Mitchell Walters has struggled a bit, but you look at his body of work for the entire season, it's been very good. And Seth Miller, I know they're working on inning management with him right now, so we'll see him pitch later this week, and that might be his last tune-up before the playoffs. But the other guy we haven't mentioned is Neil Lang, and Lang, even though he gave up a lot of hits yesterday in 6 innings, he did manage to get through 6, where I think he either shut Lincoln out or only gave up 1 run, I forget. But that has to be the Yeah, that's got to be a positive sign too, for Sioux Falls going down the stretch.
You know, you look at the starting staff and you think to yourself, when you look at these ERAs, this group has no chance to compete and really be able to make a playoff run. But as you're talking about, Ty Culbreth has pitched very well of late. We know that Neil Lang can be as dominant as anybody in this league and has shown that in stretches this season. He can really take command of a game. Akeem Bostic is a former major leaguer, so you know he's got great stuff out there. Seth Miller was the pitcher of the week last week. And Mitchell Walters was the pitcher of the week before. I mean, you got to think about this, is that if you underestimate the starting staff, you may be in for a rude awakening.
And not to mention, they don't have to be brilliant because you got a heck of an offense behind them that can put up a ton of runs.
And a great bullpen, too. So they're going to be a team that I think that could shock some others out there. And, you know, making it a championship, I realize, is a long way to go. But you know, as you like to, a phrase you like to use, which is, I think, a great one in this particular case, really is, don't sleep on these Canaries. They could definitely do some damage to a team if they had the opportunity.
But that's just me. I'm a Canaries fan. That's what Dan Vaughn said on his show last week. So I know he's just giving me the business, but I had to, like, come on, Dan. Are you serious? I mean, these guys are a hell of a story, and that's why I've been giving them a lot of attention lately. But it's all good fun.
Kent County Cougars fourth in the rankings this week, Kevin. Third place in the East Division, 47-46. Five and a half games out from behind Chicago. They're probably not going to catch those dogs, and they're not going to catch for second place. But all of a sudden playing very good baseball, 7-3 over their last 10, and have leapfrogged over the Lake Country Dockhounds, moved themselves and look like an almost lock now for at least third place in this division. George Chamis, we know, puts on the Jets near the end of the season, it seems, every year. This team is going to be no exception.
Boy, just when you wanted to shovel some dirt on this team as they were struggling and scrapping to even score runs after they got in that big sweep when Sioux Falls took all three from them, you kind of thought, okay, where is this team going? And before you know, they get back in gear, and here they're sitting comfortably in a playoff position. I just can't figure it out with this ball club.
Some nice acquisitions recently, too, Kevin. I like this. Ernie Ordonez has really performed well for them in the 11 games that he's been with the club. But I want to consider out here, in 11 games, he has hit the 9 of those contests, including 5 multi-hit games. I mean, that's quite an audition you're creating for yourself out there. Like, hey, look, I'm a guy who deserves to be in this lineup every day. And it's been those additions, Kevin. It's what George Samus does every year. Todd Lott has been fantastic for the team. Olivier Basabe brought in, has been great. He's getting contributions from every guy, it seems like, he just adds to the roster right now. And I think that's the biggest story. It's a common story for George Samus, but it's the biggest story for this team this year, because this team would have been sunk if they would not made these acquisitions right now. So a dangerous club, I think, for sure. And when you got the top closer in the league closing out games for you, you never know what can happen out of that.
And boy, not to mention, you know, we had no idea that Karsh Kowalczyk was going to be inserting himself into the picture, too. He's had 2 starts in which he's pitched 4 innings, 4 shutout innings in the first one. He gave up only 1 in the other. So I really like the way their pitching staff is shaping up for the playoffs. Right now, Jack Fox is on the inactive list. As we all know, we don't know what that means, if he's out for the year or if he's out into the playoffs or what. But it'll be a blow if he cannot pitch in the playoffs. But if he can, you have to really like the pitching on this ball club. I mean, who's been better than C.J. Eldred in the second half of the season? Granted, he hit a rough patch last night, but, boy, he's just been brilliant. So you got a playoff series where you can go Eldred, Tyler Beardsley, then, you know, pick between Nick Belzer or Weston Muir.
Weston Muir.
I think you like your chances if the bats keep performing like they have lately.
Well, a team looking to figure things out right now, Kevin, is the Milwaukee Milkmen, who looked like they were going about to run away with the East Division, run away with the top record in the league altogether, but his pitching staff has crumbled lately. Kyle Mora had a tough outing in his last start. Christian Young looked a little bit better early on in this week. But overall, this staff has just not been the same. And a little concern out there in Milwaukee, I got to think, Anthony Barone has at this point.
not getting a good pulse on this ball club. You know, they did lose 2 out of 3 in Sioux City and then 2 out of 3 against Lake Country. And frankly, they had the one win on Tuesday night where the bats looked really good. And then the last 2 nights of the Sioux City series, nothing. They get 10 runs on Friday night in the first game against Lake Country. I just can't figure out this ball club right now. You know, they got to get everything. They need to get everything in gear between the pitching and the hitting if they hope to make a serious postseason run.
It's interesting, Kevin, because the two teams I think both of us thought had the best chance of making it to the championship series when the season began were the two teams that were in the championship series last year. Both of them started out very well. I think we were like, well, okay, they're in prime position. Now you got Fargo and Milwaukee both struggling to, I mean, we don't even know if Fargo's going to make the playoffs, and Milwaukee doesn't look like the same club at all that we saw 3 weeks ago. So it could be an interesting thing where both these teams maybe get knocked out in the first round right away. That's what makes baseball fun, I guess, is you just never know what you're going to get from night to night.
From what we thought was a very potent Milwaukee lineup, if you look at it the way it is right now, frankly, you know, the only two guys in the order that really scare me are Roy Morales and Brian Torres.
Absolutely. Campbell Ago has kind of tapered off a little bit for them, and they're just not, Miguel Gomez has not been as big a producer, I think, as they were expecting out of him. So it's a very interesting dynamic. I should have mentioned Milwaukee is still second place, half game behind Chicago in the East Division. But Chicago Dodge, second overall in the rankings this week, Kevin. And, man, 9 straight victories for this team. We talked last week, last season in August, its club fell apart and barely made it into the playoffs, it seemed like, before getting knocked out right away. Now this team looks like the likely East team to make it all the way. I mean, man, they look really good right now.
I think they got the benefit of going up against a reeling Gary Sulcher Railcat team over the weekend, and boys, they laid it into the Railcats, especially on Saturday afternoon, scoring 17 runs. For some reason, Chicago has Lake Country mastered. And granted, Lake Country's going through a rough patch. So you factor those two in, and Chicago did what they're supposed to do, and now they've rattled off a seven game winning streak and find themselves in first place.
Yeah, and it's really been just an overall performance across the board for them. But let's talk about this pitching staff, Kevin. 2.14 ERA in the last 7 games. Tyler Palm looked very good in the start. Trevor Lane moved into the bullpen for the most part here and has been outstanding, you know, kind of getting a little bit of a new perspective, I think, on his season this year. Stephen Lacy has been a great addition to the starting rotation. And this is a very deep pitching staff right now. Again, I'm going to be eating crow because I saw this team not even making the playoffs at all. But, boy, pitching is no longer an Achilles heel here in Chicago, Kevin.
No, it's not. And, you know, Stephen Lacy is definitely an intriguing piece because he went out and threw a complete game against Gary Southshore in what appears to be his second start of the year, possibly.
Yes.
So you have to wonder, going into the playoffs, who's going to be your go-to guy?
That's a very interesting question, because you could seriously look at the Chicago staff and think to yourself, 4 guys have earned that spot. And I don't mean like, you know, fell into it like a team backs into the playoffs. 4 guys right now are pitching very well for this club and deserve a shot at that game one. And I think we're going to get to see a great audition over this last 8 games of the season, especially Sioux City being the closing series of the weekend. I think manager Butch Hobson is going to be looking at those games and thinking, okay, this is a potential championship series right here. I mean, you have right here. So I think the guy who really dominates Sioux City is going to be like, well, okay, that might be my game one guy. So I wouldn't be surprised to see that at all, Kevin.
You know, an interesting scenario I can see playing out too is that maybe Chicago goes at it by committee, where you have your starter go maybe four innings, and then you just let the bullpen go from there, because it looks like the guys all the pen have been throwing really well lately. So maybe that's something you do. Maybe instead of hoping your starter goes seven innings, he gives you four, and then you just play matchups from there. So it should be interesting to see what approach Chicago does take to that.
And he's got a deep enough staff to be able to pull something like that off for sure. Well, Kevin, let's jump to the number one team in the rankings, the Kansas City Monarchs. And, you know, something I was thinking about this week, and I hate to use this term, but I'm just going to use it honestly, is we've seen so much excitement out of this club over the last couple of years. And even in their championship run in 2018, it was so much fun to watch Tommy Collier and the moves that the club had made to really improve themselves. This is a very good club, but the most boring Monarchs team. I mean, I don't mean to make it sound that way, but I there's nothing that really, I'm watching this and I'm thinking, you know, it's not a Gabriel Guerrero kind of thing or whatever, but just a bunch of guys who go play baseball very well and win. And it's just, I don't mean to diminish that in any way, but it's just what you look at a team and you go, they just win games. That's all they do.
I think you took the words right out of the mouth, because that's where I was going to go with, was the boring route. And you have to wonder, maybe these guys are bored because so many of them have played Major League Baseball that maybe there's just something about playing on this level of baseball that's just not really, you know, getting them all that excited. They're just going out, they're showing their talent, they're using their talent, they're getting results. So you have to wonder what this team is going to bring come playoff time, because I think if you just show up and you're just expecting results in the playoffs, that might not be the best approach. So we'll see. You know, these guys are pros, and you know, a ring's a ring no matter what league you win it in. So maybe we're going to see it where they're just going to kick it in gear come playoff time, and we're going to see the intensity ramp up to another level with this club.
You know, Kevin, I think for the longest time this season, everybody would have told you that Chris Herrmann was, and maybe still be, a serious MVP candidate in the American Association. But to be honest with you, I think the best player in this club is Justin Wylie. We don't talk about him a lot. Just continuously goes out there and puts up solid numbers. 15 homer season for a guy that's batting near the top of the order or at the top of the order. The most consistent hitter on this club, I think, a lot of times. And that's saying a lot considering Herman's hitting .353. To me, Herman kind of got lost in, I mean, he was so good early on and has been good, but not as dominant as he was early. And I thought Wylie has kind of surpassed him as the top guy on this team. Am I a little bit off base on that?
Well, you know, depending on where they're at with their order too, it could be a thing where having Herman in that lineup gets Wylie better pitches to hit him, which makes him a better player too. Sure. So there's also that factor.
That's very true. Dropping to the last team here in the rankings, the Gary South Shore Railcats, Kevin, they are one game away from being eliminated, 7.5 out of the last playoff spot with 8 games to play for them. So we could be talking tomorrow night about them actually being eliminated from playoff contention. As you talked about in your article that you wrote looking at the power rankings this week, looks like Lamar Rogers was smart enough to realize this team was not going anywhere and it was time to start making some moves. And we're hearing from C. Montgomery that there's a little dissension going on. So concern about Lamar Rogers for next season. Now, if that's really the case, ownership probably doesn't want to hear stuff like that.
No, and when you think it's how many times have we seen it in professional sports? Granted, not with the ownership, but with a general manager, when they come in, they want their guy.
Yeah.
And I would not be surprised. I think this year has probably been an audition from the guys on the field to the front office to just the team staff in general. It's just been a big tryout for next season. And I would not be surprised if there's not just a shakeup with Lamar Rodgers, but maybe with the front office in general, and then whoever they bring in as maybe a head of baseball operations will want to have their own manager. So it could be a very interesting and tumultuous offseason for the Gary South Shore Railcats. That's too bad. You know, you and I both like Lamar. We love the enthusiasm he brings to the game, but they faded in 2022. You know, we held out hope for them that he had something special going, but it just never got going this season. So, and, you know, as we know, baseball is a results game. Granted, we have seen a lot of patience with managers in this league in the past, but you have to wonder if the new ownership are going to want to overturn a lot of what's going on with this club.
Well, you know, I wonder too, Kevin, a lot of these guys have been around here for a while. You know, Michael Woodworth got traded this week to King County and Daniel Lingua got traded away. But, you know, you're still looking at guys like Harrison Francis has been around for 3-4 years. Jack Eisenbarger has been around for 3 or 4 years. A lot of these guys, these are familiar faces to fans. And I get that that's been the Gary model. But I think it's time that if you're new ownership and you're willing to really invest in this club, even to hit 85-90% of what the salary cap is, I wonder if it's time to just blow this organization up completely. I mean, completely go. And we got to go with an entirely new philosophy, an entirely new set of players for the most part, because we're just not winning with this. I mean, how many last place finishes do you have to get before you decide the light comes on and you decide it's time to make a change?
And within looking at that, you know, you have a loyal fan base there, but how long are they going to support a team that has not been in the playoffs for many years now? And, you know, there are a lot of good managerial candidates out there and guys that are currently managing teams that would covet a spot managing an American Association team. So I know they could bring in someone new. I don't want to throw dirt in the grave for Lamar Rodgers. You know, we have not heard anything about him losing a job. We have not heard anything about what his current status is. But if they were to make a move, there are a lot of good candidates out there, I think, that could give this organization a different look.
Absolutely. And I'm assuming Lamar has been trying to, you know, work within the constraints of whatever ownership and management have put in his way as well. And I'm wondering if he's thinking, I'm assuming that he's probably saying to himself, I'm not coming back here if I'm not getting some kind of changes to go on here. So, but again, that, as you said, that's pure conjecture. So we can't really address that ourselves here. So. Kevin, let's move on to the rankings here to the Lincoln Salt Dogs. Wow, has this team fallen? And Kevin, out of the playoffs right now, technically, if the season were to end today, 5th place in the West Division, 2-8 in their last 10. And I thought we were going to see this club was battling for 2nd place, it seemed like 9 or 10 days ago, and they're in a lot of trouble right now.
It's not even Lincoln and enigmatic now. It's just been flat out bad for this club in the for this last stretch of the season. And at this point, you got to almost imagine they're going to have to run the table if they're going to try to get a playoff spot. And that's not going to be given to them with a Cleburne team coming in that's also in need of wins and then finishing on the road in Kane County, where Kane County is also going to be jockeying to try to get a 2nd place spot in the East Division. So I don't really see a lot to be hopeful about with this Lincoln Ball Club, but we should mention that David Holmberg, late season addition to the Lincoln Salt Dogs, did pick up his 100th professional victory on Saturday night in the game in which Lincoln did beat Sioux Falls over the weekend.
Huge milestone for him, and it's an exciting time for David Holmberg. I'm sure he's hoping that that winds up, you know, helping, giving that kind of performance in the playoffs as well. But, boy, there's no help around him right now. I mean, you look at this staff, and you're just thinking nobody is stepping up on this club at this point. I just think this team is gassed. I mean, I know it's hard to look at it that way, but 93 games in the season, I just think they ran out of gas right now, Kevin, and they just don't have anything else going on. So we'll come back and talk here in a minute about who you see as the final four for each of these divisions, but might not look good here for Lincoln, which we could say the same thing about the Cleveland Railroaders, the team I was thinking from the East that was going to wind up getting in the championship series when the season began. But, wow, what's going on with this club, Kevin?
They had the opportunity right in their hands this week. We saw a pretty fiery finish on one of the first two games of the series between Cleburne and Kane County, but frankly, what I thought was going to be maybe a big grudge match style series win for Cleburne just did not materialize as Kane County went in and took 4 out of 6 games over the week. And put Cleburne in danger of potentially not making the playoffs.
Yeah, this team is just the offense has been abysmal lately. I know that's hard to say because I don't want to be too critical of them. I mean, they're scoring some runs out there. Scored 6 yesterday, had 5 on Friday night. Held the 3 on Saturday, held the 1 on Thursday, held the 2 on Wednesday, shut out in the opening game of that series. King County's really good, but this is an incredible lineup. I just don't get what's going on right now, and it can't be the Texas Heat, can it?
Or can it? You know, they've had a plane it all summer. And maybe it is catching up to him. One guy I felt horrible about was Travis Perry, who threw a brilliant game going 8 innings, only giving up 4 hits. But then Michael Krause just cannot nail it down for Cleburne as Kane County came back for 3 runs in the 9th and eventually won the game in extras. So it was just that kind of a week for the Railroaders. Give them credit, they did bounce back and did get that win on Sunday night, but boy, you just don't see a lot of momentum with this club, and it's going to be an interesting week for this Railroaders team as they do have, and it's going to be a strange series in Lincoln. They are playing 2 on Tuesday night, having a night off Wednesday, playing the finale Thursday, but then driving back to Cleburne and facing Sioux Falls right away on Friday night. I believe Sioux Falls will have an extra day in there to travel down there. So it's going to be weird because Sioux Falls might be the team down in Cleburne that's rested up to face the team coming home. So as we know, Sioux Falls hasn't been an easy time for any team in the last month. So, you know, Cleburne's got to feel like the playoffs are right now. I imagine it's going to be a week where they feel like they're going to have to go 5-2 in these last 7 games if they feel like they're going to make it.
Club is 44-49, a game behind the Lake Country Dockhounds, who we'll mention right now, who are 45-48, 7.5 out, holding on to that 1-game edge over Cleburne for the final playoff spot. But they're 2-8 in their last 10, Kevin. Giving Cleburne every hope that they can get back into this playoff series, this playoff chase here, and wind up overcoming Lake Country and grab into here. But it's been I think they've become kind of the enigmatics for us here as the offense just not able to overcome some pitching struggles. Our pitching comes together, and then they're not getting much of an offensive production. And Curtis Carey doing everything he can, Kevin, but there's just not enough out there right now.
Boy, he's been a fun story to watch. He's kind of if you want to go with the Milwaukee theme, Curtis Terry has been a modern-day Rob Deer. I believe his batting average is around 227, 230, but 16 home runs in only 36 games, and I think the biggest blow, possibly the biggest hit for Lake Country the entire season, had been his home run off of Peyton Gray on Saturday night when he golfed a low pitch over the left field wall to finally break the 8-game losing streak, and then the Doc Hounds went on to win on Sunday afternoon, too. So that hit by Terry may have saved the season for this team.
Yeah, and it's, again, another great addition by Ken Huckabee to wind up getting him on the club here. But the group that was really guiding this club early on here, Marcus Chu, Demetrius Sims, Blake Terry, all hit up lower than 200 this week. Same thing for Jack Grossham's. They had for him too. Dustin Woodcock fell down a little bit this week as well. It's just a club that is not getting very good production. And as you talked about, that's Terry with three homers this week, Kevin, but a 143 batting. The only three hits that he had the whole week were home runs.
It's kind of like the old, remember the old show back in like the 50s and 60s that ESPN brought back in reruns in the 80s, the Home Run Derby.
Yeah.
And remember the broadcaster would make sure you know it's a home run or nothing here on Home Run Derby. And that's the way it was for Curtis Terry last week.
It very much so is. The Winnipeg Goldeyes, Kevin, still hanging on in that West Division as they come in at 41-53. 4.5 out for the final playoff spot right now. Just may not be enough games in there. But, boy, they're sure making it look good. RG Martinez named by us today as the pitcher of the week after posting a 0.53 ERA in two starts last week. They may be going away, Kevin, but they're not going away quietly.
And keep in mind with the series, they lost 2 out of 3 games to Kansas City. They lost 2 of those in extra innings. So with a little bit of luck, they could have very well swept the West Division leading Monarchs, and maybe they would have gave their fans a little more to be optimistic about going into the last week, because they're playing better, but time's just not on their side right now. I just don't think it's going to be enough time for them to get into a playoff spot. They would have to win every game, and then Lincoln and Fargo would have to falter mightily, and I just don't see Winnipeg being able to leapfrog two teams like that. But, you know, give the Goldeyes credit for having enough pride to play some pretty decent baseball when really, in theory, they don't really have a heck of a lot to play for.
And I want to focus on that, Kevin, because 6 weeks ago, we were talking about, you know, this team just doesn't look like they have very much going on here. And Greg Taggart was in a very bad spot because there wasn't any talent that he was going to find somewhere else. There wasn't a lot to go out and get. And he hasn't added a lot of instrumental players over the last 3 or 4 weeks to really improve this club overall. This is the same basic group that he has run with from the start of the season, with the exception of he's made some subtractions. This isn't intended to say that Jacob Ockley is a plague on the Winnipeg Goldeyes locker room, because I don't know anything about that. I'm not insinuating that in any way. But he made a couple of releases, and the club is getting sensational pitching all of a sudden. And so I think if you're a Goldeyes fan, you think, you know, Taggart needed a year to really understand what coming back, what he needed to do in Winnipeg. But you got to feel pretty optimistic about next year.
Let me throw this out at you, though. With this team, knowing that likely they weren't playoff bound, do you think maybe they've just relaxed a little bit, and maybe that's why they're playing better baseball? How many times have we seen that where a team is out of the race altogether and they just settle in and throw a nice streak together just enough to tease the fans about potentially being good the next season?
Yeah, I think my first 4 years of covering American Association Baseball, Sioux Falls always made a nice rally in August. And we always thought, man, this team is really going to be something. And that never wound up materializing from like 2015 to 2018. But we'll see. Depending on who winds up coming back to this club, Samuel Adames looks like he's the real deal as a closer. It'd be interesting to see if he winds up getting a deal somewhere else. Luis Ramirez is kind of iffy one way or the other. RG Martinez, but looks like a guy who has a bright future ahead of him. So it'll be interesting, Kevin, for sure.
Yeah, I think they definitely have some pitching to build around with some. You know, we've seen what RJ Martinez can do. Luis Ramirez has been a workhorse for them. Joey Matulovich has kind of come out of nowhere and thrown some really good ball for them. Yeah. And for a team that's only won 41 games, for Landon Bourassa to go out there and get 10 wins, granted, you know, he doesn't have the gaudiest ERA of an even four is hits innings pitch are a little higher than you'd like to see, but he has managed to find a way to win 10 games on a team that generally wasn't giving you a lot of offensive support.
Well, Kevin, 1 week from now, when we record the final regular season show of the season, who are your four teams in the West Division?
Oh, I think it's definitely Kansas City. And then let me go out on a limb, and I'm going to say Sioux City is going to find a way to get second place, third Sioux Falls, and then Fargo-Moorhead will be in fourth. In the East,
I'm going with that four as well.
In the East, I'm thinking Chicago will edge Milwaukee with Kane County in third, and I would say Cleburne finds a way to get it done to get in the fourth position. Lake Country's got to go to Kansas City for the last four games of the year, so that's a pretty tough call for the Dachshunds to be able to stay ahead of Cleburne.
Oh, the Cleburne, the new Enigmatics. What, man, do I want to believe they're four. And I'm gonna go for, man, you know, they're the home team that they just, for some reason, can't win at home. I don't know what that's about, but I'll see a 4-3 week for Cleburne, and that winds up earning them a playoff spot. Now, Kevin, let's talk about the real fun situation. If you're Chicago or Milwaukee, to be honest with you, and win this division, who do you play in the first round?
Well, I just think it seems like in this league that teams value not having to make the long trip over who they best competitively match up against. So if whoever finishes first, I believe will opt to play Kane County in the first round, not because of any disrespect to the Cougars, but just because it's going to be a shorter road trip. If that
could
answers
you see
your question.
Chicago? Yeah, could you see Chicago, if they win this division, and let's say that they have a continual monster stretch down the end here. Let's say, you know, 6-2, or what do they got left here? 6-2. Let's say they go 6-2 this week. So 15-2 over their last 17 games. And Milwaukee, let's say that they go 2-5 this week, 2-6, something here, 2-5, that's where they've been. Is Chicago bold enough to go, we'll take Milwaukee? Let's get out the team that is really struggling and probably has the best overall talent on here. Let's get them while they're down and then take our chances with a Cape County or Cleburne.
I guess that would definitely be eliminating the travel issue, but boy, you're just leaving yourself open for a lot of second guessing if that blows up on you.
I think that would be a very bold attempt by them. And I just think if you've got a struggling Milwaukee club, Kane County is playing very well. Cleaver, and you hate the travel of it. Wow, yeah, you're right. It could blow up in your face, but I could see being bold like that. So, well, we're going to find out a week from now when that comes down.
You know, I'm wondering, I'm going to do some quick looking up as we're doing the show here, so I will try to fill time by just rambling on about something here, but, you know, recently the Travis Savannah Banana Show went to Des Moines, Iowa, and set an attendance record down there, filling up, I believe, like 12, 13,000 people for their gimmick games. And that show is heading to Milwaukee, Wisconsin.
Yep.
Just in time.
Okay, first two games of the championship series.
Yes. September 8th would be the night of game two of the playoff series if Milwaukee had home field advantage for that. So now you wonder what's going to go on as far as, are we going to see like, for game two, Savannah is playing at 7 o'clock at Franklin Field. Tickets are sold out for it. So there's not going to be any cancellation, obviously.
No.
So where do the Milkmen play that game? And I know it says against Milwaukee Milkmen, but we'll see, like we saw in Kansas City to an extent, where it'll just be local players playing as the Milkmen. So let's not even think about that. But where do you play game two and game three? Because game three would be on Saturday the 9th. And it's a doubleheader at Franklin Field. You can't just have the Milkmen play at a playoff game at 1 o'clock and then have the Bananas at 7. That feels booked all day. So now does Milwaukee, if they got games 2 and 3 at home, are we seeing a scenario where if they're playing against Chicago that if Lake Country's not in the playoffs, that maybe they got to go play that game in Oconomowoc? It's going to be really interesting to see how that plays out, or it could be where they just make a deal where they would only have game one at home and then games two and three would be on the road. So I think it's going to be an interesting scenario if Milwaukee does have home field in the first round.
And I think you're looking at that and you're saying to yourself too, hey, you did that to yourself. And if they're complaining about, well, this would be unfair, well, you did it to yourself. You know, you got
to be.
Maybe
they'll make it real simple. Maybe if Milwaukee does get the choice, they'll just say, well, we'll just play on the road. Give us game one, and we'll take two and three on the road.
Yeah, you know, they might have to do that. Yep, they might have to do that. So I think it's creating an interesting scenario for sure.
But boy, if I was jump around the fan, I'm really into it, I wouldn't be too happy about that.
No. And it's stunning that a team that you know is going to have playoff aspirations every season, believes that they're competitive. I mean, they've made the playoffs every year in Anthony Barone's tenure as manager. Why you decided to book games, exhibition games, you know, during the playoffs, when you know your team is going to be in the playoffs, not the smartest to move. Now, again, attendance-wise, making some money, great, fantastic. But if you're worried about your Milkmen teams, probably not the best of moves, I think.
You know, I respect the heck out of Michael Zimmerman and what he is trying to accomplish in Franklin with just making that entire facility a year-round destination, but I think this was a situation where he put business ahead of his baseball team, and maybe it's with Anthony Barone's blessing, too. Maybe he sees it, too, as, hey, if we're going to be a long-time thing here at Franklin Field, maybe we need to do these kind of things where we bring in these acts and get people out here. But you know, to the fan that just sees it as they want their team to win a championship. It's going to be a tough one to explain.
Yep. I agree with you. Well, let's jump around the rest of the partner leagues out there. See, I got it right this time. Out there in the Frontier League, Brandon Backman of the New York Boulders named as Pitcher of the Week after another solid performance by Backman this week. I believe he just had the one start, tossed six scoreless innings of two-hit ball to earn a victory in his one start of the week. And Alfredo Marte from the New Jersey Jackals named as the Player of the Week. So congratulations to the two of them. Looking at the Frontier League standing, the Gateway Grizzlies with a two-game advantage over the Schaumburg Boomers for the top record in that division. Again, the top four teams make it out of the West. And right now, the Washington Wild Things tied for that fourth spot at 43-47 with Joliet. So then we're going to be battling over the last few games here to try to earn a playoff spot. The New Jersey Jackals leading by a game over the Quebec Capitalis, and with Tri-City and New York looking to grab those final two playoff spots. It's going to take a lot for New York to drop that final spot for Sussex County to catch up to them, three games out right now. The Atlantic League still winding down. They have another 3 weeks, I believe, left in their season. Lancaster Barnstormers leading by a game over the Southern Maryland Bluegrass in the North Division. And in the South Division, the High Point Rockers hanging on to a half-game edge over the Gastonia Honey Hunters. And that's your partner league wrap-up for this week there. Kevin, tell us what's going on out there at the 10th inning stretch.
Well, it was a busy weekend as I threw together the blog under less than ideal health situation for me right now. But, you know, we're chugging along like everybody else has to do this time of year that's not feeling 100%. But, you know, if you get a chance, give it a good read. It's where I kind of break down that it's just not easy as opening up the gates and letting fans in and being ready for American Association Baseball. Just a lot of people have to do a lot of things to get ballparks ready and get teams ready for the games. Just give it a good read because I think, you know, after reading it, you see things in a different light as far as what these organizations do to try to entertain us the entire summer. And on a good note, my local town ball team fell in defeat 2-1 yesterday in the Minnesota State Amateur Baseball Tournament. The difference was a suicide squeeze single in the top of the eighth that scored the lead run, and Faribault just cannot do anything offensively as New Ulm. And any of your managers that are listening in right now, last year I told you about Josh Kingery. Nobody bit on him, or if you did bite on him, he wasn't going to go pitch baseball. I'm going to give you another name here. Ethan State, I believe it's spelled S-T-A-D-E. He is going to be a sophomore at Minnesota State Mankato this year. Last year, limited action for Minnesota State, had an ERA of under 2. He went and pitched summer ball for the Wilmer Stingers this summer. They had like 20-some innings, ERA under 2, more than a strikeout per inning. Hard-throwing young left-hander. Put this name in your Rolodex because in a couple of years, I could see this guy as someone that could go sneak under the radar and could be a good find for an American Association team. So, American Association managers, you're welcome.
I like it. Out there in minor league sports support, summer's getting away from me, so I got to start catching up on some stuff. So I'll be looking at my top four manager of the year candidates, starting tomorrow with the first two, and have two more on Wednesday, and then we'll do four for pitcher of the year, and finally four for the MVP. We'll look over with two each day, two a days, heading in there into the end of the season. My shout-outs this week, Kevin, I have two of them. My first is to Dan Vaughn. I want to say thank you for noticing that my picture of Wilfredo Jimenez, since they did not have one on the league website of Wilfredo, that I had to use one from his days in the Gary South Shore Railcats. And Dan, nice enough to quickly send me a copy of Wilfredo's shot from the Explorer so I could replace the image I had on the website. So thank you for Dan for that. And I also want to give a shout-out out there to Luke Roskin's dad, who I hear had quite a difficult time in Sioux Falls on Saturday night. You know, Kevin, we love American Association fans, and we know that they're passionate about their teams and always seem to be welcoming of opponents' fans that are coming in. But that did not appear to be the case in Sioux Falls for the Roskin family on Saturday. But, you know, you got to like a dad who comes out there and supports his son. And so I believe it's Paul Roskin, I want to say, you get my shout out this week.
Okay. For my shout out this week, before I give it out, I just want to let my tens of readers know that there will not be a Sunday Insider this week, as I will be doing a final Insider with final power rankings once the regular season ends on Monday. So look for my Sunday Insider to be a few days late, probably going to be Tuesday, in which I'll make some playoff predictions and give you my final power rankings for the regular season. My shout out this week is to Jake Dykoff. Jake began the season with the Fargo Moorhead Redhawks, immediately following a collegiate career at Minnesota Crookston. Jake got off to a very good start with the Redhawks, was named to the All-Star team, ran into some arm problems that affected his performance, and was eventually released. But instead of just going home and shutting it down for the season, Dykoff returned to his town ball team, the Bluffton Braves, and threw six very good innings to help the Braves advance to the final 16 of the Minnesota Class C 2023 amateur baseball tournament. So good luck this week to Jake, and of course to all the guys that will be out there battling for state championships this week in Minnesota.
Fantastic. I like that a lot. Well, Kevin and I once again want to thank manager Steve Montgomery for joining us this week. Next week, since it's the last regular season show, we traditionally have just Kevin and I gave our final thoughts onto the regular season and kind of previewed each of the series looking ahead, which will also mean that the two of us will be going through the eight teams and their broadcasters, talking to them about their previews. Which with me asking a series of four or five questions that I will ask to each of the broadcaster and Kevin taking their answers and then coming up with some individualized ones, which is always made for kind of a fun show to get a preview into each of those series. So look for those next week as well. And I think that that's all we have going on for this week, I believe. Because that's plenty, Kevin, I would say. So let's roll with that. So for Kevin Luco, I'm Rob Panier. We'll see you next time on This Week in the Association.